call the answer line, where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and I'm sure you must be a bit like me at the moment, never straying too far away from a radio or television to find out the latest on the Gulf crisis. All the events over there make planning a weekly media programme rather difficult at the moment. You feel rather helpless, don't you? But I'm sure you'll understand. Let's have an up-tempo start.
Radio Netherlands. Get stuck into a good program instead of glued to the television.
And before news events squeeze out our competition, let's hold it right now. This competition should be very easy. Let me tell you about the prizes, first of all. We have five copies of the 1991 World Radio TV Handbook to give away to the runners-up, plus one copy of the handbook and a subscription to the WRTH newsletter, now called Downlink, and that's for the top prize winner. Some new compact discs came into our record library a few days ago. Somebody had the bright idea of getting a brass band ensemble to play several dozen national anthems and record it on a CD. So, if you feel a bit Andorran one evening, you can turn out the lights and salute to this. Actually, you might like to know that Radio Andorra is back on the air, as from about 10 days ago, but only on FM and only in the Catalan language. So there you are. Now, coming up is a medley containing four national anthems. There's no political significance in the choice. It's simply that if you can name the countries to which the anthems refer, if you write down the first letter of the country in each case, you should be able to make a word. So, pause buttons off the tape recorder. Here we go with a medley. Four national anthems there, making a four-lettered word. Stations in the countries concerned all play their respective anthems at the sign-on or sign-off of their transmissions. That was question one. Now for the second question. This year, Media Network celebrates 10 years on the air. That's on May the 2nd. Question number two is simply, if you took over my job as the editor of Media Network, what, if any, regular topic would you get rid of? Answers on a postcard or on a letter to this address. Media Network Quiz, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, 1200, JG, Hilversum, the Netherlands. That's Media Network Quiz, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Just give us the word and also the answer to the question. If you took over my job as the editor of Media Network, what, if any, regular topic would you get rid of? Answers must be postmarked by January the 21st, 1991, at the latest.
This is Europe's news and information station, Radio Netherlands.
This is John Barnes from Newville, Pennsylvania, in the United States. On your broadcast of Friday, January the 4th at 0030, you reported that the Iraqi radio at frequency 13660 had faded and nothing more was to be heard. I'd like to report that we are receiving the broadcast in North America. I listen in at 2100 hours. The signal is strong, but the audio quality is poor. What do you make of that?
Well, last night at 21 hours UTC, the transmission from Radio Baghdad on 13660 kilohertz did propagate into Europe again, so it must have been a case of bad reception conditions rather than transmitter trouble over the past few weeks. Thanks for that call. Now, at 21 hours, the other English service from Baghdad, the Voice of Peace, intended for troops in the Gulf area, was also audible on 11860 kilohertz, 11860. That's a busy channel with other stations on the same frequency, but it's worth checking from time to time. The Broadcasting Service of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia announced yesterday that it was switching to a 24-hour schedule instead of going off the air between 23 and 03 hours UTC. We haven't yet been able to do a band scan to see which frequencies they use for that extended period, and no doubt it means an extension to the Arabic language programmes. As far as English is concerned, the external service is listed on 9705 and 9720 kHz, 9705 and 9720, between 16 and 21 hours UTC, but it doesn't make it into Northwest Europe. If you live outside Europe, you might want to try 1440 kHz medium wave for the 1.6 megawatt transmitter in Dammam, Saudi Arabia, which carries the domestic service. I know that's often heard as far away as Australia when conditions are favourable. I say outside Europe because here we get Radio Luxembourg on 1440 kHz with a mere 1.2 megawatts.
This is Radio Vilnius from Lithuania.
Music from Lithuania. In the course of yesterday, Wednesday, Radio Vilnius's domestic service started calling on people to rally round the Republic's Parliament building to protect it from possible assault by Soviet troops. Back in March last year, when the relationship between Vilnius and Moscow rose to a crisis point when the Baltic state declared its independence, Radio Moscow stopped relaying Radio Vilnius for a few days on its shortwave transmitters. If you want to watch if anything happens again this time round, here are some frequencies and times to bear in mind. The first broadcast from Radio Vilnius to Europe in English at 22.30 UTC goes out on medium wave 666 and 1557 kHz and on 6100 kHz shortwave. At 23 hours, so half an hour later, there's a 30-minute English broadcast beamed to North America. That goes out over Radio Moscow transmitters using 17720, 17690, 15180 and 7400 kHz. Radio Vilnius's own transmitters carries the same program at 23 hours on 9750 and 6100 kHz.
This is Radio Vilnius. Hello and welcome to our daily broadcast.
Last night at 23 hours UTC, the Radio Moscow transmitter on 7400 kHz was relaying Radio Vilnius as usual. In the course of their newscast, they said that at one stage yesterday, troops had surrounded the television tower.
Sometime later, seven armoured personnel carriers surrounded the TV tower in Vilnius, in which Lithuania has its only transmitters that can relay radio and TV programs to Lithuania and to the world.
Radio Vilnius program for the Axis.
BBC Monitoring in England reports that Radio Vilnius' DX programme this past Saturday gave more details on a medium wave station called Soviet Lithuania, operating in Vilnius. It's been on the air since June, run by the Lithuanian branch of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. The studios are in the former Communist Party High School in Vilnius, and the transmitter is at a Soviet army base just outside the city. Programmes are in Lithuanian, Polish and Russian on the channel of 864 kHz, 864, with a power of around 20 kilowatts. So that's not going to be heard with all that larger radius. There seem to be equivalent stations operating from Soviet military sites in Estonia and Latvia. Lithuanians say that the Soviet-Lithuania station is regarded as a clandestine. Radio Moscow, we announced last week, has made cutbacks to its external services, although a new French service for Canada is noted by the BBC between 03 and 05 hours UTC. One final note from that region of the world. This past weekend, Latvia expanded its English-language transmissions from Riga. Instead of just a news bulletin on a temporary basis, there are now two weekly half-hour broadcasts. The first is on Saturdays at 18:30 UTC on 5935 kHz. The programme is then repeated the following day, Sunday, on 5935 kHz at 07 hours UTC in the morning. So 5935 at 18:30 or 07 hours. All this is under the name of Radio Riga International.
Radio Netherlands, Europe's untamed radio station.
Jonathan, my name is Peter Walsh. I'm from Glenroy, Australia. Given that you've had bad reviews, to say the least, of the ICR1, that is, you haven't given it really the thumbs up as a handheld shortwave and a VHF scanner, have you had any feedback from ICOM regarding these bad reviews, and is there any possibility that the ICOM company may be, as you say, taking the receiver back to the test bench and reworking the whole design?
If they are, they're not telling us. ICOM say they're evaluating the response, though, and the unit will not be released in North America. Last week, I asked for unusual recordings made from shortwave around the New Year period. Dr. Kim Andrew Elliott in Washington, D.C., sent us this submission, which he recorded from Radio Beijing's New Year staff party.
And to help us get in the spirit of the New Year, we want you to meet Gu Ming, who works in the features section and produces music programs.
Well, Gu Ming, what will you do for us tonight?
Well, I'd like to sing an American folk song.
What's its name?
It's called Home on the Range.
Well, can anybody beat that recording, I wonder? Our post box is open. Our trip a few weeks back to Eastern Europe was so successful, judging by audience response, that we're planning to take the show back there over the next few weeks. For today, we'll start halfway, as it were, in southern Germany. What with recent hiccups in the press freedoms granted to Soviet journalists, stations in Western Europe have been in the news there again. In the Englischer Garten section of Munich is a beautiful white mansion surrounded by a high wall. It's the home of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. They were originally set up by the Americans to beam their version of the truth into the Soviet Union and the East Bloc countries. William Marsh is the Executive Vice President for Programmes and Policy at RFERL, and I asked him to explain how they've responded now to those changes in Eastern Europe.
The most important change, as far as I'm concerned, is that we're using a lot of interviews that are gathered right in the countries we broadcast to, and we have reporters in the countries we broadcast to reporting to us regularly.
Was that impossible then during the time when you were jammed? I mean, could you get any reports out at all, or did you rely on monitoring, let's say, the domestic services of the countries concerned?
We were able to do that before to a certain extent, but remember, when you're jammed and you're airing a telephone interview, that the very nature of jamming would cancel out a good... It's not intelligible. Would cancel out the message to a large extent in any case. Now that's not true anymore. Now the quality of our telephone interviews has improved, and we're able to use that for a good part of our programming. The other thing I wanted to mention as far as program content is concerned is that we're talking a lot about democratic institutions nowadays and about problems that these countries face, ecological problems. Problems in creating and running democratic institutions. We call this the democratic experience, and every one of our broadcasting services is devoting a large part of its programming to the promotion of democratic institutions.
But there's still enough interest in shortwave in those countries? I mean, the media there is changing. The domestic media is becoming more attractive, so it's said. I mean, does that mean to say that the audiences then to shortwave radio will go down?
Sure, the domestic media have improved measurably. We know that. We know that the competition is much greater. We also know that we've lost audiences. We are conducting internal surveys now in all the countries to which we broadcast, and a survey that has just come out of Bulgaria, for example, shows that we have the largest audience. It was conducted only in Sofia, I must say that. Largest audience there with 22%. Now, this is not the almost 50% of the audience we held before jamming and before the democratization process began. But 22% of a domestic audience for a foreign broadcaster is a very, very large audience, and we're proud of that. All international broadcasting audiences have dropped in these countries, by the way, and we just want to hold on to what I regard as a very large and satisfying lead.
Dobré jutro, vážení posluchači. Hlásí se vám československá stanice rozhlasu Svobodná Evropa se svým českým a slovenským vysíláním.
Well, Radio Free Europe recently hired airtime on a medium-wave transmitter that used to be used by the old Radio Prague. Instead of beaming programs out of the country, the network is now being used by a foreign network, namely RFE, to reach a domestic audience in Czechoslovakia. The BBC has followed suit. Just before Christmas, they began hiring airtime on FM from the Czech post office in three cities. Tune in to 101.1 MHz in Prague and you now get this.
You're tuned to London programmes in the BBC World Service. In just a few seconds, we'll have a news summary for you, and then we'll be joining...
And it's
John
a similar
Dimash
story in Bratislava on 89.3 MHz and Brno on 92.6. Bill Marsh of Radio Free Europe says that for the moment, the cooperation, as far as their station is concerned, is limited to the technical field only. They want to maintain their independent identity from the domestic services in the countries concerned.
We already have three very large transmitters in Czechoslovakia, which we lease, a total of 900,000 watts, and we're covering all of Czechoslovakia except the far eastern part of Slovakia. Our audience is there, according to initial indications based on internal surveys, tell us that our audience is rising spectacularly in Czechoslovakia because of that. People can listen to us now in automobiles. We can create so-called drive-time programs, which we never could before.
And what about the facilities for beaming in, for example, of the Soviet Union? Are you also improving shortwave facilities?
Well, as you may know, we have a very large project in Israel that should be completed in 4 years, 5 years, depending on the continuation of funding. And if that is the case, then our reception in all parts of the Soviet Union will be increased to a large extent, yes.
And what about the facilities in Spain and Portugal?
Well, we're building a new facility in Moxiquera, Portugal, right now, which will give us much stronger coverage in all of Eastern Europe and in the western parts of the Soviet Union.
Is that to replace existing equipment, or is it, in fact, a new operation?
It's a new operation. We're not curtailing our operations in Gloria, Portugal, or in Pau, Spain. Pau's transmitters beam programs into the Soviet Union, and Gloria broadcasts the programs into Eastern Europe.
And the reason for putting them there was simply from the radio propagation point of view, was it?
Absolutely. I don't think there could be a better propagation point than Pau, Spain, on the Costa Brava for broadcasting programs into the Soviet Union. We're right on the Mediterranean. We have a good flat takeoff point there. And all indications are that those signals are coming into Moscow very, very loud and very, very clear.
I know that for a time the Voice of America has been leasing time from one of your transmitter sites because of the crisis in the Middle East. Is that also an indication of more working together between VOA and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty in the future?
Well, we found that we could be of some assistance to the Voice of America, and why not? We have also a great interest in getting information into the Gulf area. What we did is we leased our several transmitters in Gloria, in Portugal, to the Voice of America, with which the Voice could transmit to Eastern Europe and then use its other transmitters in the Mediterranean area to get a better signal into the Gulf.
But you've also been able to pass messages on, for example, from Eastern Europe to the Gulf, too, because there is obviously overspill.
Yeah, there is substantial overspill. We have been working actually closely with the Polish government on this because there were many, many Poles in Iraq and Kuwait, and we found that our signal was coming in there quite nicely, and so we did transmit these messages for the Polish government, and we had very recently a nice letter of thanks for having done that.
Now, Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty run one of the largest research centres on Eastern Europe and the USSR in the world. Just wander through their reference library to see shelves full of statistics and reports on all aspects of life. As well as documentation on hand for the programme makers, audience research is also important too. Peter Herman is involved in studying what happens to the media in Eastern Europe and Radio Free Europe's audience there. In the days of jamming, carrying out surveys in places like Czechoslovakia was simply impossible, so it had to be done by interviewing travellers leaving the country. But surely, looking back on it, all this was suspect.
No, it was much more professional than that. In fact, when I came to Radio Free Europe from the BBC in the beginning of 1988, I knew quite a lot about the methods, but I was once I delved into them more, I was very, very impressed by the rigour in which all our research was conducted. It wasn't just a case of grabbing someone on the street and saying, hey, you do listen to Radio Free Europe, don't you, and marking it on a clipboard. No, all our samples were constructed by the well-known quota method of sampling, where we built up samples based on our knowledge of the parent populations. Obviously, that meant that we were looking for about 50% men, 50% women, a range of educations, a range of ages, people from capital cities, people from the countryside, range of occupations. So we will build up our samples based on this quota method of interview using professional research institutes in all the cities I've mentioned and others. This research went on for about, as I say, we started about 1957. It was built up over the years. And even in the year before we drew it to a close, we were still developing and improving the methods. In 1989, with the political events, it became clear that sooner or later we were going to be able to work in East European countries themselves and not have to rely on these visitor surveys.
Aici Radio Europa Libera. The first Western-sponsored survey in Eastern Europe was carried out by the BBC in Poland during February of 1989. State-run broadcasters in those countries had done surveys before then, but foreign broadcasters were never very sure whether or not the results were influenced by the political situation in those days. But what about Radio Free Europe?
Our first experience at RFE was in mid-1989, where we started with a survey in Hungary. Since then, we've carried out research in Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Poland, and recently in August 1990 in Sofia in Bulgaria. As well as that, this would have been supplemented by a range of qualitative research.
And that means that as well as checking how many people are listening to your station, you also ask a group of people why they listen to foreign radio in the first place and which programmes they like or dislike. As you might expect, people don't really know who's asked them to come and talk about international radio in, say, the lounge or meeting room of a local hotel.
People were recruited by a research institute in the country concerned, and it was explained to them that a discussion would be held about the future of the media, the domestic media, and the future of Western radio in their countries. And if they were interested in participating, they would be welcome. It was explained there would be about six, seven, eight people at the discussion, and the discussions would be audio recorded, and in some cases they were video recorded. People didn't know particularly that RFE was the sponsor. In fact, this wasn't told them at any stage. We said that we're just carrying out some social research into the future of broadcasting. So people would gather together at a set time. Occasionally it was in a hotel, sometimes it was in a private house. And at the beginning of the discussion, they'd fill in a short questionnaire with a few details about themselves. So the moderator or the chairman of the discussion, the person who led the discussion, will have an idea of the sort of people, sort of person there was at that discussion. And we did carried out this sort of work in Prague, in Bratislava, in Warsaw, in Gdansk, in Krakow, all over, in various cities in Czechoslovakia, Hungary and Poland.
Now, how is the situation changing? I mean, there has been a time when people didn't believe their domestic media and for that reason turned to Western media to find out what on earth was going on in their own country. Do they believe their domestic media now more than they did?
They certainly believe them very much more than they did. You're right that the reasons for listening to Western radio and to Radio Free Europe have changed. Our research has shown that Radio Free Europe still has a very important role as a check and control on domestic media, on their accuracy. If we are there as a watchdog on that, then people are confident that that the pressure is on their own domestic media to provide accurate, up-to-date news. And it's clear that that service from domestic media has improved a lot in the last 15 months, certainly in the three most advanced media countries, say Czechoslovakia, Hungary and Poland. We have a lot of evidence to indicate that. What we also have evidence of is that while straight reporting of news, political events, etc., is much better, the analysis of these events and in-depth comment on them is really not up to the standards that people want.
The other major change has been the ability for RFE to open news bureaus in Eastern Europe. Bill Marsh says that these operations are now very important.
Almost 90% of our domestic Hungarian programming is emanating from our bureau in Budapest. We also have bureaus in Prague and Warsaw, and they're not producing programs as such, but they're contributing to programs put together here in Munich.
But that's not yet the case with the Soviet Union.
No, but we have a lot of freelancers in the Soviet Union who operate openly for us. They're reporting for us regularly from Moscow, Leningrad, Kiev, and from Siberia. They make up a good portion of our Russian language programming today.
That was William Marsh of Radio Liberty and Radio Free Europe. And finally, the heads of the current affairs departments from seven of the nine public broadcasting societies operating in Holland announced yesterday they're willing to pool resources to allow the production of a joint news and current affairs magazine three times a day. At present, each time you turn on talk radio here in Holland, you get a completely different editorial style, different presenters. In short, duplication is proving to be too expensive. Only two broadcasters, KRO and EO, object to the plan. Over the next 2 days, all Dutch domestic broadcasters are having serious talks about the future of public broadcasting here over the coming years. That's it. My thanks to Richard Meesham for background help today. Look for us on the dial next Thursday.
Input on the output to Media Network Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Or fax your fax to 31357243522.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.